Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you on this Friday, September the 26th, 2025. Brendan Kraft, my fine young engineer producer on the other side of the glass. Hey, Brendan, be happy that you are not in downtown Phoenix right now. They are getting hammered. 80-mile-an-hour winds, 1-inch hail. It is just it's a big weather event that's pulling through the Valley of the Sun. But we're just getting some very intense showers around the area.
Yeah, just very concentrated bursts. Yeah. Like yesterday when I left here, mm-hmm. I was going to pick up my car with my grandfather, and just in the middle of town, huge burst everywhere around it, clear sky.
Same thing happened to me after the show yesterday. All right, we are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios, part of the Bustos Media Center. 5 radio stations here in one location. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for live news and talk. We'll complete our 15th year on the radio in January, then push closer to nearly 4 decades of participation in Tucson media. We have our worldwide live listening during the program at buckmastershow.com, where we take the live feed from kvoi.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews, 520-790-2040, is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Folks are always available. If you'd like to call in, Brendan will take your call and we'll get you on the air with a question or comment. Our media partners, a big shout out to TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News and Saharita Sun and Tucson Spotlight. Thank you. I can say directly to the people at Tucson Spotlight, thank you, Caitlin Schmidt, for you guys and your participation and supporting what we do at the Buckmaster Show.
Of course.
Caitlin is former Arizona Star reporter. She's won many awards, including the 2019 Arizona Sports Writer of the Year Award by the National Sports Media Association for her ongoing coverage of gender-based violence in the U of A athletic department. She's now editor and co-founder of Tucson Spotlight, a newsletter launched last year with Arizona former Star reporter Susan Barnett. Boy, the year's gone fast, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
And congratulations. You guys were honored recently for kind of was, I guess, one of the startup awards of local online news media?
Yes, we were a finalist for New Business of the Year through local independent online news publishers, which is very exciting.
Very good. All right, our Friday Focus interview, John Kamik is back with us, director of Tucson Water, celebrating its 125th anniversary. John, how are you?
Good. Doing great, Bill. How you doing?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. First of all, 125 years. Tucson may be one of the, this may be one of the oldest water companies in the country.
It's definitely been a long time, and it actually, our history goes back a little further. The first pressurized water system was in 1882.
Really?
And it was a franchise agreement between the City Council of Tucson with a private water operator. Mm-hmm. But the anniversary we're celebrating is from August 3rd, 1900, when the City of Tucson decided to buy that franchise out and make the Tucson Water Company the Tucson Water Department of the City of Tucson.
The water was coming from where initially?
Initially in 1882, when the first franchise came to be, it was a diversion from the Santa Cruz River just north of Valencia Road and to a an area just south of downtown right now near 18th and Osborne. Hmm. And then from there, a pipeline made it to the corner of Main and McCormick. And in that summer of 1882, a hydrant was put there just south of Congress, and it was opened up. Now, some people might ask, where's Main and McCormick? Now, both roads are still downtown, but the intersection of Main and McCormick was removed when the convention center was built in that neighborhood in the 1960s. Mm. So if you stand near the west entrance of the Tucson Convention Center, that was actually the first location where Main and McCormick was, where a first water hydrant was placed in Tucson.
Wonder if you have any old pipes that are still around from that period.
There's been some past employees that were looking for that original pipe because it was gravity flow from the river all the way down to downtown. And And we're hoping we can find a piece of it pretty soon.
Before I turn it over to Caitlin, it has been anything but a robust monsoon season. Does that impact you, John Kamik, and Tucson Water?
Well, yes. When we see a good monsoon, we actually can see it reflected in the wells near, particularly near the mountain fronts all around the community, whether it's the Rincons and Tanque Verde area and along the Catalinas. So when you see a heavy monsoon later in the fall, you see a rebound happen in a lot of those wells. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, yeah, there's the reaction right there. But when we have a drier than normal monsoon, like the one we're having now, it's rare that we'll see that bump in the aquifer happen.
Is Tucson still considered a groundwater city as far as the federal government is concerned?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what kind of makes Tucson unique. We are considered one of the largest groundwater drinking systems in the country. Hmm. Even though most of our water supply is the Colorado River, the way we handle it here in Tucson is different. We recharge our aquifers with the Colorado River water from the CAP canal, and essentially turning it into groundwater. But then we recover what we need as a groundwater system, and we pump it around the city.
How long has that been going on?
Our system for recharge and recovery with Colorado River water started around the year 2000, and I think early 2001 was the first recovery effort. We started recharging in the late 90s, and then we actually pumped it into the city and what was called our Clearwater program in early 2001, and we've been going strong ever since.
It's almost a hybrid system, isn't it?
It's the way we use our resources, right? Mm-hmm. We have to be very creative in the desert, and that's what kind of has made Tucson and Tucson Water very unique. We look at all the waters that we have in our portfolio, and we try to maximize the most efficient benefit use of that.
Mm. Here's Caitlin Schmidt.
So, I mean, we've clearly seen quite a bit of growth and expansion and changes in these first 125 years. What are you all really excited about as we launch into this next millennia?
Well, in the next 100 years, and a lot of this is detailed in our Tucson One Water 2100 plan that can be found online, it's exciting because, like I mentioned, the focus of this community to be responsible Sonoran Desert dwellers, what we've done as customers over the last 40, 50 years, transitioning from the days of lawns and, you know, 50,000 gallon pools and all that to actually meeting the needs and living in conjunction with the Sonoran Desert. And that has just made our water supply and our water resource portfolio for this community extended, you know, for the next 100 years and then some. So it's been, there's a whole bunch of wins that have been happening in Tucson, and we like to celebrate it at the department, and everybody in this community should celebrate that they're one of the most water resilient cities in the Western United States.
We need to go over some terms, don't we, though, Caitlin?
Yeah, I think we saw this summer there was a lot of confusion over what different things like recharged or reclaimed or potable even or water positivity mean. I feel like a lot of the work that you do is kind of just educating the public on what all of these things mean.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of terms. I think, you know, part of the focus this summer was on the recycled water system, or we call it the reclaimed water system in Arizona. And that is where the city and Tucson Water uses the highly treated wastewater effluent that Pima County Wastewater produces. We have a strong ownership or a large ownership of that, and we've been using those drops of water a second time or a third time throughout the community, and been doing that for 40 years now. And so major developments that may be coming to Tucson, whether they're commercial and industrial or more developments like if there is a future golf course or future schools or parks, one of the priorities for Tucson Water is not to use directly groundwater or Colorado River water for those uses, but to use the recycled water program and have those drops of water work a couple extra days for the community of Tucson.
Mm-hmm. So recharge is the Colorado River water that goes into the groundwater, and then reclaimed is water that's already been used.
Well, recharge is recharging the aquifer is the way to think about it.
Even I can get confused, right, Caitlin?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, so recharging the aquifer can be done with any water. So we started in 1984 by recharging effluent for the reclaim system. So we were able to prove that you could do that in Tucson. So then by the year 2000 in the late 90s and early 2000s, then we developed recharge, aquifer recharge for Colorado River water. So we've been blessed with a perfect geology for to being able to take water from the surface and hiding it underground away from the sun and away from evaporation. And that's what we've been doing with the majority of our water supply now for 40 plus years.
Mm-hmm. So now reclaimed is something that we may be drinking someday.
Reclaimed is the term for using treated wastewater
yes.
for another use.
So
right.
what's the pathway for that?
All right. So the reclaim system is mostly the irrigation system, separate system in the community that goes to schools, parks, golf courses, etc. But however, what we're going to be working on is taking some of that reclaimed water, wastewater or treated wastewater effluent, and treating it and purifying it through an advanced water purification plant in the next few years and being able to introduce it back into the drinking water system. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be one of the first communities in Arizona to do that. The city of Phoenix and the city in Scottsdale are coming along the journey. They're going to be building much larger plants than Tucson, but we will be having a smaller plant, a 2.5 million gallon day facility here located on the northwest side by the year 2032.
Were the regulations just approved on that?
And that's exactly why we're moving forward, Bill. The city of Tucson and other partners throughout the state have spent more than 10 years working with the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality to come up with rules and regulations, and those finally got passed earlier this year, actually in January, February of this year. And so the three major cities are now moving forward to diversify their water resource portfolio again by introducing purified water from advanced water purification.
And there'll be education about this because people are reluctant.
There's going to be a lot of education about it. And actually, that gives me an opportunity to say, besides the real plant that will be built at near Tres Rios, INA and I-10, we are also building a community center off of Sweetwater Drive at our reclaim water main station there. And that community center is going to have a small-scale pilot of the larger treatment plant, maybe operating at 40 to 50 gallons per minute. And that might be open sooner than the actual plant, but we're going to have a community room there. We're going to be able to bring members of the public, school groups, HOAs through that and actually show and demonstrate all the treatment processes and then eventually have a cup of water at the end of the process.
Mm. Cool. I'd drink it. How about you, Caitlin?
After watching it
I'd drink it. All right, question from a listener. Good question, actually. Why don't they cover the Central Arizona Project water with solar panels or anything to reduce the loss to evaporation?
That's a great question.
It is.
It's very timely. There is a pilot study actually happening with the Gila River community. Was able to get a grant from the Bureau of Reclamation, I believe, and they're actually testing how much evaporation you can slow up by covering part of those open canals up in Pinal County where the Gila Rivers reside.
Would drinking reclaimed water put a small dent, right, in our drinking water requirements overall? When you go to that new system,
we look at it as it diversifies our portfolio of all the water that Tucson Water has control over, right? Mm-hmm. So we know the Colorado's in question. We have our CAP allotment. We know that's probably going to be affected due to shortage on the river itself. We know we have large amounts of groundwater that the city owns rights to, but we keep that as our insurance policy. So by going to an advanced water purification process and having that as another card, let's say in a 7-card poker tournament, is something we look to do to make sure that Tucsonans can pivot at any time in the future from one water supply to another.
I'm going to pivot to Mona's Danish Bakery, Caitlin and John. It's the gold standard of bakeries, John Kamik, here in the Tucson area. I know you love bakery goods.
I do.
Mona's has been in. How about you, Caitlin?
Oh yeah.
Mona's has been around for over 20 years. Steve, the owner, spent a lot of time in Denmark. That's why their signature pastries, the Danish Kringle. They also do a very beautiful traditional almond wedding cake. So all sorts of great pastries up at monasdanishbakery.com. They do serve alcoholic beverage, and we talk a lot about breakfast, but they do lunch too. So got an extensive lunch menu. You can check out their menu. Everything's online at monasdanishbakery.com. Doors open at 7 o'clock Tuesday through Sunday. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Check it out. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Very nice. Brendan Kraft putting some nice bump music for us here on the Buckmaster Show as we shimmy into segment number two on the Buckmaster Show Friday edition. Friday Focus interview, John Kamik is here. John is the director of Tucson Water, which is celebrating 125th anniversary. John's been with the company off and on now for a little over 25 years. Caitlin Schmidt is here from the award-winning now Tucson Spotlight, a newsletter launched last year with her buddy, former Arizona Star reporter Susan Barnett. Caitlin, why don't you kick things off with John Kamik in segment number two, talking Tucson water.
Yeah, so we were talking before the show and during the break about reclaimed water and during the show, but you had said that it's underutilized. And I'm thinking for like the average consumer, what does that mean for us and what can we do to help use more of that and less of, you know, the drinking water and groundwater that we want to preserve?
No, that's a great question and something that we love talking to the community about. So the way the reclaimed water system works and historically works is we have the system when we have a set of demands from schools, parks, and golf courses. But the wastewater supply is still much greater than that. So the Bureau of Reclamation, the City of Tucson, as well as all the most of the other utilities in the area all still own a portion of that water. And that water ends up from the two major Pima County plants, the Agua Nueva plant near Princeton I-10, and the Tres Rios plant near Ina and I-10, and they end up in the Santa Cruz, and that's why you have the Santa Cruz flows for 23-plus miles through the town of Marana and in the Pinal County. The good news is that that effluent that's flowing in the river, most of the community still gets recharge credit for what recharges in the Santa Cruz up into Trico Road. And Trico Road is just south of Pinal Air Park. But there's a significant volume of that water that flows beyond Trico Road. And it's enough that it is underutilized water that the community actually has ownership of, all the various stakeholders that own effluent rights. But once it passes Trico Road, it leaves the confines of what's called the Managed Recharge Project. And it's lost water, lost opportunity to the utilities.
And the Santa Cruz River, new report just come. Well, there's a report every year. There has been one for 12 years. It's a very healthy river, the Santa Cruz. And as you point out, for about 23 miles of the river, it flows year-round. But apparently the wildlife there is flourishing along the river. And
It's like anything, Bill. You put water in the desert, life comes, right? And,
yeah.
And the biggest advantage with the Living River Report in identifying what Pima County wastewater has been able to do since 2013, when both of those major treatment plants were upgraded and actually a new plant at Agua Nueva, is the water quality of the treated wastewater in this community is so good. And so when it's released to the Santa Cruz River or released from City of Tucson projects like the Heritage Project in downtown Tucson, it is just a very clean water, and life just flocks to it. Dragonflies, birds, coyotes, javelina, you can see anything along the Santa Cruz where the water is at.
I love dragonflies. They are a harbinger of change, according to the First Nation people up in British Columbia, the Haida Nation. And here's some interesting information, Caitlin and John. University of Arizona researchers identified 41 dragonfly species at a site in Marana. And the good news is, compared to the previous year, it's up two more species. There were 39 the previous year.
That's awesome.
So if it's good enough for dragonflies, they must love it. I don't see any issue. Also, you've got iguanas, right? You got all sorts of things going on up there. Turtles, Sonoran mud turtles.
There's definitely a lot of turtles. And we had, when those plants were upgraded, we had the return of the Gila top minnow. Showed up in the Santa Cruz as well. So there's fish, turtles, frogs, dragonflies, and anything you can think of.
Well, Caitlin Schmidt, we do rely on Colorado River. As John was pointing out, we need to recharge that, and we do recharge it, but the numbers at the river have been going down.
Yes, they have, as we've seen, which I think is why it's so important, like John was saying, that we find a way to diversify our resources.
How healthy is the Colorado River in terms of flow right now, John Kamik?
Yeah, the Colorado continues to struggle. It's in the midst of a 20 to 25 year drought now. So their challenges are immense. You know, when the river was originally appropriated back in the day, it was thought that it would produce 16.5 million acre feet a year.
Right.
And that's how the contracts were. But it's barely, you know, 10, 11, 12 million acre feet for most of the last 20 plus years. So, and that's why you see Lake Mead and Lake Powell continue to fall. All that storage that took place in the mid 20th century has just been, that insurance has been slowly going down, down, down.
And it doesn't help that the situation has been very politicized. A director who had a lot of experience here in Arizona has been rejected by the federal government, and the deadline is coming up for the particular allotments on the Colorado River next year, right?
Yeah, it's called the reconsultation on the river, and it's in 2026 is the deadline. So we have some There's supposed to be a draft agreement of the seven basin states and 30 tribes in November for the federal government to consider. And then eventually by March of 2026, hopefully a final plan. But the way negotiations have been going between the states, in particular between the lower basin states, which is Arizona, California, and Nevada, which have their ideas of how it should be appropriated, and what happens in the upper basins, Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, and New Mexico, all the indications I hear is there's no agreement.
Here's Caitlin Schmidt. Caitlin?
Yeah, so we saw a lot of talk about water supply this summer with Project Blue, and we saw the city council move forward to take action against future potential large water users. Is there an issue within the city or any talk about existing large water users, or is that not really something we have a problem with?
Well, most of our large water users, if not all of them in the city right now, are on the recycled water system, the reclaim system. And, you know, whether those are the golf courses or large users, would be categorized as large users, most of them. But on the potable side, we don't have any that meet that current threshold of 10,000 CCF average per month on that side. Yeah, having that large water quantity user ordinance is going to be interesting, and there's going to be opportunity to refine it that for mayor and council later this year. And it helps put some guardrails in if somebody wants to come in. But from the Tucson Water standpoint, if there's a large user that does want to come to our community, ideally, we put them on the recycled water system. We don't want to have that additional pressure of service off of the drinking water supply for the community.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin, you brought this up earlier about water credits. There was a lot of confusion during the Project Blue hearings. That kept coming up. Maybe John can clarify what is a water credit?
Well, the way the our water resources are managed in southern Arizona and the other populated areas of the state is with the Arizona Department of Water Resources. So we're in what's called an active management area. We're in the Tucson active management area. So those municipal and private water companies in our area have to have assurances for development, particularly residential development, of a 100-year water supply. So you just can't come in and guarantee somebody water and then you don't have it. So what that means is we have to make sure that we have either groundwater rights, or we have, in our case, aquifer recharged Colorado River water, or aquifer recharged effluent and effluent rights. All those things go into our water resource portfolio, kind of like a big savings account. And then on every year, we debit from it, we add to it, and that's how the state keeps track of making sure that communities like Tucson, Phoenix area, can have enough water supply for the future to meet development. And so when you put water in the ground, it becomes a credit. It becomes like its value in your checking or savings account when it's respect to water.
Mm-hmm. Do we have a lot of water in that savings account?
We have millions of acre feet, and that's what gives me great comfort to say that Tucson's one of the most water resilient communities in the western United States. And just as a reminder, our community only uses about 100,000 acre feet a year.
100,000.
And so we have more than several million acre feet in ownership and entitlement. And the two that continue to renew is if we continue to get Colorado River water, that's a renewable input into our savings account, and then recycled water from the effluent ownership of the community, that continues to be a recyclable water. So when you look at it from a checking and savings perspective, we're in a very strong position.
What's your water quality like? I see so many people buying bottled water. They just insist on that particular product. Does your water stack up against bottled water?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we've always been very, very compliant with the EPA Safe Drinking Water Act. That's one of the things that we have to do. And we have our own water quality lab at Tucson Water, being the largest groundwater system you can imagine. We do tens of thousands of tests a year. So it's beneficial that the community actually has its own water quality laboratory. And we do not only regulatory compliance to meet the guidelines, but about 50% of our water samples are discretionary. So we invest the money to continue to know what's in our water, even beyond what the regulations say. And then we look for things that aren't even regulated. And that's how we came to find PFAS many years ago in our system.
The forever chemicals,
mm-hmm.
which people get very confused about that, Caitlin.
Always. And as we discussed, we're talking about these forever.
We will never stop talking
about
FIFA.
That'll be the news story that will never go away. But these forever chemicals for folks that wonder, well, how'd they even get here. At one point, it was a cleaning solvent that was used right out at the airport.
That was TCE. That was the solvent.
Yeah. Okay. That's another problem.
That's a different problem.
And that's still going on.
That's still going on.
Still cleaning up.
Yep. The Tucson Airport Remediation Superfund site is still on the south side of Tucson. Mm-hmm.
But to kind of give folks the big picture of this, when you have the TCE and the PFABs, what percentage of our overall portfolio had to go offline because of that?
In 2021, when we removed the Tucson Airport remediation project off of our drinking water supply because of PFAS,
right?
We could see it coming into the wells before treatment. That was representing about 10% of our drinking water supply.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot, but we diverted it to the recycled water system. And so now we're using that highly purified water from the Superfund site to help augment additional water supplies for the reclaimed water system that Tucson Water runs on that side, as well as an outfall near Irvington Road. So we have another riparian habitat in the Santa Cruz River near Irvington that's having that highly purified water.
Were we supposed to get repaid or reimbursed from the Air Force or the federal government? Good luck these days, right?
Yeah. That is always an ongoing conversation.
I don't know
conversation.
About that one.
We recently did get some reimbursement from a multi-district litigation suit that the city joined several years ago against the PFAS manufacturers. Mm. So a few months ago, we received our first reimbursement check from the manufacturers, just a little over $4 million. And just last week, we received another check for $11.8 million. So we're expecting to receive somewhere around $32 to $35 million from the manufacturer lawsuit associated with PFAS.
Rush to the bank and cash the check right away. Mm-hmm. All right, Caitlin, what else do you have?
Well, since we're talking about money, Tucson Water has all sorts of programs for customers to save money via rainwater harvesting, water-saving appliances. What's the usage rate on that? Are people taking you up on those offers?
Yeah, that's been one of the great things about the Tucson Water customer base in our community, having that conservation fund to be able to do all these rebates and these programs. And we have thousands of customers who have taken advantage of that. Some of the big wins is getting rid of those old high flush toilets that used to be three and a half gallons and having something closer to a 1 gallon flush now. But as well as rebates that we have for clothes washers, dishwashers, and like you mentioned, some of the outside irrigation activities, including rainwater harvesting. So yeah, Tucson continues to be a national leader with our customers and doing the right thing and making sure that every drop of water counts and has a purpose.
We haven't talked about rates. How do we compare to other cities our size?
Rate-wise, mm-hmm. The comments I get from other utilities around the country when I travel is they can't believe everything we do and how low our rates are. It's still very affordable. So our rates have been very affordable for many years, and it is because we keep track of everything in our investment into our system and our investment with our customers. And our customers using less water means less energy at the end of the day. We have very affordable rates on a national standard.
And you're going to be the customer will be paying for depending on how much water they use, especially in the summertime, right? I mean, that's where it really seems to kick in.
That's where the biggest bang for the buck came several decades ago when Tucson went to a tiered rate structure.
Yes.
So, the more water you use, you fall into a higher tier, which is a more cost per mm-hmm. unit of sales. And that has been probably one of the biggest triggers. It's financial trigger. Mm.
Mm-hmm. How about customer service? Are you always looking at when people call Tucson Water, are they getting a good experience?
Yeah, we monitor our customer service bank all the time. So there's probably nearly 40 people who are taking calls, monitoring calls, supervisors listening to calls, and making sure that we're giving the customer the best experience possible. But on top of that, making sure if the customer qualifies that they can take advantage of not only our rebate program for conservation, but our affordability programs if they need and choose to be part of that.
Here's a question from a listener. A lot of Tucsonans feel, what's the purpose of saving water just for a data center? This person is obviously not all in favor of a data center. And Caitlin Schmidt, we know there are a lot of people in Tucson that have some very, very strong feelings about that. How is the company looking at these data centers, which by their very nature are high water users? But I guess if you don't want to go with the high water, Caitlin, you can go with the high power, what they call closed loop, or John, just generally about data centers.
Yeah, just I'll say any large water use. When somebody comes to the utility with a proposal to have a development, some large-scale economic development. So our role at Tucson Water is, can we serve them, right? So we look at it from a planning, a resource management, an engineering perspective, and we look at what they want to do once they disclose what their water use is, and we answer the question, can we serve them? And in many cases, yes, we can, with enough investment from who the developer is, we generally can do that. But when it goes to should we serve them, that is a policy discussion, and that's where it usually falls to the community and the community's representatives, in our case, or whether it's the mayor and council being the elected body, and they make the ultimate determination in many of those cases.
And what about AI, artificial intelligence? Will that be used?
Artificial intelligence is currently being used at Tucson Water. We started a program a few years ago to help us with our capital improvement program for neighborhood replacements of mains. So we load up more than 13 variables, whether condition of pipe, type of pipe, date of installation, break history, just to name a few, and we actually run it through artificial intelligence, and it helps us to know which neighborhoods should have main replacements before others, and is giving us a good direction. And we've been doing that for probably more than 5 years now, and it's been working out fantastic. But there's other areas in the utility we're also looking to explore artificial intelligence and helping our operations.
Another quick question from a listener. Mm-hmm. Rainwater harvest program, is it still available?
Yes. Yeah. As far as I know, we're still available. If you go to our conservation page on the Tucson Water website, it should have enough information there to get you the information you need on rainwater harvesting.
Any final thoughts, John, that you would like to share with our listeners?
Just what I always want to remind our listeners, especially the Tucson Water customers, we've been doing a great job as a community for probably more than 40, 50 years now, whether it's the conservation on the end with our customers adapting to the Sonoran Desert lifestyle and using the water that they need, all the way to how Tucson Water, with the help of our mayor and council over the decades, have diversified our water portfolio, taken advantage of the Colorado River, taken advantage of our recycled water programs. Now we have the Storm to Shade program, which is doing neighborhood greening using rainwater and stormwater. It's actively working right now, probably out there in many neighborhoods. And everybody should just feel real proud that from a water resource perspective, the community of Tucson is in a tremendous shape compared to many other Western cities.
Of course, I always think of another question, even though we're out of time, and I'm just wondering about those that do abuse, or they're you know, is there like a Tucson Water cop who can kind of go around, for want of a better word, somebody that checks out somebody that may not be really using water properly?
There are staff that are out there to look for irrigation, you know, off sidewalks, and kindly tell people, you know, you might want to check your irrigation. You're watering cement right now.
Right.
But the biggest deterrent for large water use are those tiered rate structures that we have. And it only takes somebody a few times to realize that they are overwatering or they have a irrigation break that they don't know about when the bill comes in the following month.
All right, John Kamik. Thanks, John. Great to see you.
All right, thank you.
All right, coming up segment number three, my co-media host, Caitlin Schmidt. We're going to talk about a couple of the stories that Caitlin and the team at Tucson Spotlight have been reporting on, including professional baseball is returning to Tucson. It's a good story. We'll be right back.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to John Kamik, who is the director of Tucson Water. It's kind of interesting. Caitlin Schmidt is with me, my media co-host today. I had no idea that Tucson Water was like celebrating 125 years and that before it became even Tucson Water, like when the stagecoach was arriving, back in the, I guess, the 1870s. I'm sure there was stagecoach. There was Tucson Water, basically.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine.
Pressurized pipeline coming. I don't know. Anyway, Caitlin Schmidt is with us, the editor and co-founder of Tucson Spotlight, a newsletter launched last year with former Arizona Star reporter Susan Barnett, who Caitlin worked with. Over at the Star, and you guys, as we pointed out at the beginning of the show, doing some great work. This is the way the industry is going, isn't it? With these online stuff, in the traditional newspaper on your doorstep is just going away.
I mean, I think so. It's really expensive to print a paper. We are very concerned about the environment these days.
Right.
It's So I talked to the class the other day and had a student ask if we were looking to do a print version. And I mean, we're kind of brainstorming ways to go back in print. And I think the entire digital industry is, but also being mindful that that's not going to be the solution long term.
No, I mean, it might be cool, little retro paper of Tucson Spotlight. And you're really getting some really fine original reporting out of young people.
Yes. We really are trying hard now to be a hub for mentorship and training and learning opportunities for this next generation of journalists. Mm-hmm. If they don't get the experience in the field, it's going to be hard for them to find jobs. And if we don't have journalists when you and I and our colleagues retire, we're going to be in a sad state.
And you're able now to, with the help of these young people, who, by the way, do get paid.
All get paid?
It's not...
That's right.
Like a slave labor thing.
Not like when I interned.
No, I know. Yeah, me too. Back in the day, a million years ago. But this does give you an opportunity to cover maybe some of the underserved areas. Like you had a great report on Oro Valley and some of the insight on what's going on over there with their Vistoso trails, which is a really big deal to people in Oro Valley, but doesn't get, area-wide publicity.
Yeah, I mean, when you have the city of Tucson and Pima County grappling with fentanyl overdoses and affordable housing and whatnot, the reporters that we do have working tend to go towards the more dire issues. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that the community coverage is still not important to the people that live there. So we're trying to show up in places like Oro Valley and Marana and South Tucson and, keep those residents informed, but as well as people in the rest of Tucson. I want to know what's happening in Oro Valley and Marana.
Your background, I mean, you've covered sports, you won a bunch of awards covering sports, and it's interesting now that after a long time, pro baseball is returning.
It's great, right? We're so excited.
Tell me a little bit about what's going to happen.
Yes, so Tucson has a team that is part of the Mexican Pacific League. We are officially their only North American team. We'll be part of league play starting in October at Keno Stadium. And this is going to be the first season, but we have some other exciting events coming up, Mexican Baseball Fiesta. But hopefully this will kind of put us back on the map instead of, we've done a great job these past few years in the absence of a professional team of hosting, fun events a couple times a year. But this will hopefully give us some more stability for the fans that live here and the fans that live across the border that will come here for those games.
It's a highly respected league that I know the big league people really watch what goes on with the Mexican Pacific League.
Yep, one of the biggest in the world.
Yeah. So the Tucson team doesn't have a nickname.
Does not. No, uh-huh. It's the Tucson baseball team. And it's really interesting what they're doing. They really are community focused. When you look at kind of the different ticket packages and structures, they really want to make it an experience rather than just going to a baseball game. Mm-hmm. So it'll be fun. I see a lot of excitement around on social media. So I suspect that we'll get a nice opening weekend.
And this team used to be in Sonora.
Yes.
And they decided to come up here. It's very interesting, isn't it, to look at the economics of why they thought that would be a good idea, especially with all that's been going on politically. So good for Tucson to get professional.
Yeah.
I mean, these are good players, right? I'm sure. All right, Caitlin Schmidt, how can people find out more about your product, Tucson Spotlight?
We are online at tucsonspotlight.org. We do not have a paywall. Please sign up for a free subscription. We will be in your inbox Monday through Friday with new stories. And we will also be in your inbox on Sunday with a roundup version. And if you are so inclined, you can find us on social media on Instagram or TikTok. In both English and Spanish. For our Spanish consumers, we have a page, El Foco de Tucson.
Very good. And you've been doing some traveling, going to different conferences. And generally speaking, at these conferences, this online, people are really jazzed about it, aren't they?
They are really jazzed.
People in our business.
Yeah, they really are, including some of the legacy print outlets, too. I was just at the Online News Association conference, and a lot of startups, a lot of digital only outlets, but there was a good showing from places like the New York Times and the Washington Post and these big outlets that are really trying to
figure
adapt.
Out what they're going to do next, right? Adapt and figure out what's our next step.
Keep going. Yep. And we can learn. I mean, they've done some great work to transition to online. So I feel really excited for the future of the industry.
All right, Caitlin Schmidt. Thanks, Caitlin. Great to see you.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, coming up next, Weekend Watch with our sister station, 101.7 The Drive. Ken Carr is waiting in the wings.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Time for Weekend Watch, presented by 101.7 The Drive and Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Start planning for your great getaway, an enchanting getaway in the land of enchantment. It's an easy three-hour drive east of Tucson. This is my favorite time of year anyway. And over in New Mexico, it's always delightful. Those warm days, clear, cool nights, seeing the stars. Oh, my gosh. Perfect time of year, and start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. A ton of stuff to do over there. Hope you have a great time in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome Ken Carr now from 101.7 The Drive. Hey, Ken, how are you?
I'm good. I think if you head to Silver City, a sweater might be in order.
With the way we're getting some cooler weather here. All right, what's going on this weekend?
All right, do you like corn?
Of course. I come from Illinois. Are you kidding? Of course I love corn.
Well, I like corny jokes, but your part applies. Mine does not. Mm-hmm. The Pueblos del Maíz Fiesta, which is essentially a corn festival, is happening at Kennedy Park, Ajo, and La Cholla. That's tomorrow from 3 to 9. Celebration of corn with food and artisan vendors, and believe it or not, corn. Family-friendly activities, art installations, live music, just a nice little family-friendly event, and all the corn you can handle. Mm. Every single nugget.
Sounds like a corny event.
It is a corny event. We do love corn in this area, though.
Uh-huh.
And even popcorn. The Sowrita Oktoberfest is also coming up a little later today. It starts at 5 o'clock at Sowrita Lake Park, which is on Rancho Sowrita Boulevard. And it's got authentic German brats and pretzels and gingerbread, regional beer, immersive art installations, and that's free to attend as well. Let's see, the summer night market at the Mercado San Agustin Annex is happening starting at 6 o'clock tonight. Over 65 vendors, food trucks, and your favorite Mercado shops are open. One of the things about these night markets, they've really been extra popular this summer. So if you like to be outside, hopefully the rain will be slowing down a little bit as we get into the evening. Laser music shows at the Flandreau Planetarium continue. Tomorrow night, it is Laser Daft Punk at 6:30, Laser Bad Bunny at 8 o'clock. These are all music artists, if you're not familiar. And Laser Billie Eilish at 9:30. So you can do it back to back to back. And it's really neat how they do the laser shows for all of these music presentations.
I'm glad they're still doing that. Hope you have a great weekend. I know the drive's got a remote. Where's that real quick?
I'll be at Roadies tomorrow, 11:30 to 1:30, and we're bringing out the classic car. We're giving away the 1967 Ford Fairlane.
We'll be listening. Thanks, Ken. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Thanks to Brendan on the other side of the glass, Ken Carr. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great weekend.